Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
Aimavar have been working with global corporates and startups on what we term innovative new value chains, which are connecting new technologies, ventures, and corporates with new business models in the transport and energy sectors, as electric vehicles will revolutionize many industries. This podcast is one of a series where I speak to leading executives who are making the important transition to sustainable future. We have been working in the UK, Europe, and with programs in leading locations such as in Oslo and China, where there are high penetrations of EVs and massive numbers. Do get in touch if you would like to find out more, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts. Thank you.
So, welcome to Goals Question Time. Today I've got the pleasure of being joined by Rupert Mitchell, who's the Chief Strategy Officer at WM Motor, who's in Hong Kong, and I'm in London. So it's great to have you on the call and podcast, Rupert.
Thanks, Andrew. How are you?
Very good. Thanks very much. Very good.
Yeah.
So, Greg, could you kick off and give us a brief introduction to yourself, please, in terms of your role and your previous sort of experiences?
So as you said, I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at WM Motor. So in that role, I look after, you know, international financing, business development, M&A for the company. I joined just over 18 months ago after a 25 year career in banking in London and in Asia. Most of those years out here in Hong Kong. I worked with, most recently, Goldman Sachs. Prior to that, had a long career at Citigroup, but was always fascinated by the Chinese EV market. And when Freeman Shen, our founder, approached me with this role, I leapt at it.
Great, great. So could you describe for the listeners, please, about WM Motor? Because, you know, we all know about the big T Tesla, and we know about the traditional car manufacturers here from the West. But, you know, you and I know about the rise of lots of electric vehicle businesses and that in China. And I think WM is fascinating. So, if you give us an introduction to the business and the founder and where it's got to, please.
Yeah, of course. So WM was founded back in 2015. So we're 5 years old now. We're headquartered in Shanghai, with manufacturing operations in Wenzhou City in Zhejiang province, and also in Huanggang City in Hubei province. Our founder was a gentleman called Freeman Shen, who people may be familiar with his name. It was him that was responsible for the acquisition of Volvo Cars from Ford for Geely back in 2010, and it was Freeman that basically arranged for the repatriation, if you like, or the patriation of the manufacturing base for Volvo back into China. Anyway, Freeman assembled a crack team of multi-decade automotive executives, including Alfred Ho, who's our president, who spent 25 years at General Motors China, in fact, ran all of their manufacturing operations then. Our chief financial officer, Ran Zhang, had 20 years within Ford, both in Dearborn, Michigan, and in China, as well as on the technology side. Our CTO is a chap called Jarvis Yam, who is one of the co-founders of Banmar, which is the auto tech JV between Alibaba and Shanghai Automotive. We went into mass production of our first car, which is a compact SUV, all electric, up to 520 kilometers of range, back in September of 2018. We've got just over 20,000 of those EX5s on the road right now. We launched our second model, the EX6 Plus, at the Guangzhou Auto Show back in last November. That is a larger SUV car. Think about the size of a BMW X3. Very much where we are is positioning ourselves is to be a player in the mass market of Chinese automotive. So, you know, for example, REX5, the entry level version of REX5, which is a 400 kilometer range A-class SUV, is 139,000 RMB, which is about $20,000 on the road after the subsidy in China. You know, that is, you know, around 40% of the price of an entry-level Tesla Model 3.
Fascinating. Great introduction there. So we're seeing from just 5 years old, bringing together sector experts, you know, from the automotive, but, you know, also from the, you know, the experience of China in building things which have got motors and have got electronics and building a new platform, which, of course, we know China has been experts in for a long time now in terms of mobile phones and other sort of devices. But that price point as well is fantastic and amazing. I know when I was in, I think it might have been one of your vehicles, I was in with a DD driver, and I was asking him what do you think about the vehicle, and he said the price, and I had to do a double take with him and sort of say, seriously, is that the price? You know, and that includes the battery in that as well, because I thought there was some other sort of financing thing in that with it. For $20,000, having a quality SUV and that on the road is fantastic. It's, you know, and we're seeing that. So could you give us a bit more of a perspective of the overall China market for electric vehicles, how it's large and growing, and the perspective and that from, you know, where you sit now in China for this sort of global change, really?
Yeah, sure. And actually, you touched on one thing that I'd love to come back to in a second, because I think it's a key part of where the Chinese car market is, and that's on connectivity. But let's park that and come back to it, and I'll answer your question, Andrew, about the sort of market structure. So, you know, last year was a, you know, frankly, it was a pretty terrible year for the Chinese automotive market. You know, you were into your second year of, you know, like-for-like monthly sales volumes for the overall industry, you know, falling. And, you know, and with the recent coronavirus, you know, we've seen an extension of that, if you like, auto bear market, notwithstanding a sort of glimmer of hope in January before the Lunar New Year. But to put some numbers around that, you know, just under 1.2 million cars with a plug, so that's pure battery electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids, were sold in China last year, just under 5% of the overall market. Now, when you look at China in terms of private car ownership penetration, China is sitting at about 176 cars per 1,000 of population right now, which, maybe if you want to compare that to Europe, you'd be in the sort of 400 territory. If you want to go to the US, you're looking at 800 per 1,000. I'm not saying that China's going to get to that kind of North American level of vehicle ownership.
We hope they don't, because the urban environment wouldn't be able to cope with all those numbers if we all lived like that, would they?
Well, we would just have to build a few more cities. I think one of the interesting things about the last few months is the rest of the world has discovered that there are literally dozens of cities in China with populations in excess of 10 million that no one's ever heard of before. But, you know, I digress. I mean, in terms of, you know, EV penetration within what is an already very large market with the potential to grow, you know, it is absolutely not inconceivable that by the time you get to 2024, 2025, China could be selling in excess of 5 million EVs per annum in that market alone, which is, what, twice the number of cars sold in the UK last year, just in terms of, you know, a market size. And, you know, I think, you know, that's a baseline. If penetration adoption accelerates, you know, Norway style, you know, you could be looking at numbers that are twice that number. So in terms of price, and you mentioned this in terms of you mentioned leasing. So, you know, essentially, let's break down the various tiers of the market. So the mass market of China automotive is designed as, you know, prices between 100,000 RMB and 300,000 RMB. And that represents two-thirds of the overall market. The premium segment, 300,000 and above, is really only about 11 or 12% of the overall market. And then you're talking about sort of little runarounds below 100,000, which is, you know, call it around 20-25%. So, 20% rather. So, you know, that's where we're positioned to prosecute. And really, even within that 100 to 300 range, the sweet spot is below 200,000. And so it was very much Freeman's objective to make sure that our product positioning was in that, you know, that widest point of the market. You know, the leasing and vehicle financing business in China would seem prehistoric to anyone used to PCP and leasing plans available in the West. When automotives in automotive companies in China talking about, you know, a relatively small percentage of their buyers taking financing, what they mean is they only arrange financing for a relatively small percentage of their buyers. You know, the reality is your conventional auto loan in China looks like a five-year straight line mortgage. So, you know, to make the numbers easy, if you're borrowing 100,000 RMB to buy a 100,000 RMB car, you're paying 20,000 per annum for 5 years plus interest. So it's taking no residual value calculation into the overall mix. Now, when you were talking about your DD driver a moment ago, we have actually introduced, you know, just before Chinese New Year, we announced a pilot program whereby we would be selling the 400 kilometer range versions of our new car, the EX6, on a shell basis. So essentially for 50, you buy the shell of the car for 50% of the sticker price, and you enter into a leasing contract for the battery pack, which also includes free charging up to a fair usage amount. So you know, the focus, what we're doing is, you know, is reducing the, you know, the sticker shock of the front end cost of buying a car. You know, consumers, particularly younger consumers, you know, much prefer a world which everything is calculated on the basis of a monthly cost. You know, we identified that, and you know, interest levels in that structure, you know, are very high.
And I think that takes us on to the broader point, really, that, you know, this whole value chain now of electric vehicles, infrastructure, where the energy comes from, I mean, it's green energy, you know, dealing with charging in dense urban environments, which of course, you know, China's got a lot of, where there wouldn't be a, you know, people don't have drives, you know, the typical American suburban picket fence and a drive with two Teslas sort of in the front drive. That's not the sort of scenario you've got in dense urban environments. So you've got to think about that whole value chain. And also then with car sharing and services like DD, that those things are changing. So how is WM or the, you know, the industry changing in China relating to these things? Because I certainly see a lot of innovation in these business models and change happening, you know, in China than I see some in the West sort of sometimes. So any perspectives you've got on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, ultimately we see WM as today we are a manufacturer of affordable, connected, all electric cars. However, we see ourselves as a mobility company going forward. You know, we did not go down the path, unlike a couple of competitors, of directly operating in the charging infrastructure market. But what we have done is we have launched at the same time as launching our first vehicle, a mobility app called Get and Go, which currently has just over 30,000 monthly active users. Get and Go I guess in the UK, at its essence, would be something similar to ZapMap. We have partnered with a dozen of the private sector charging infrastructure companies, as well as State Grid, and we have mapped all of their several hundred thousand charging stations onto that app. And the app, which is connected to our Living Engine infotainment system, enables users to both identify the nearest charging station that has an available point, reserve that charging station, navigate to that charging station, and pay for the electricity all via the app. But this Get and Go app is also a broader mobility portal, which gives users access to our pilot, Zipcar style car sharing fleets in some of the tier one cities, as well as the vacation car rental fleets that we have in several tourist destinations, and also our OEM partner fleets on the Didi and Meituan ride hailing networks. So it's a one stop shop for mobility solutions.
Yeah, so it's very much more an ecosystem that car companies need to build, and energy providers and all that, rather than some of the old model.
Yeah, so I mean, ultimately, on that, we have a pretty deep partnership with State Grid, and we're working with them on vehicle to grid and the vehicle to home.
All right. Yeah.
Solutions. We're also in discussion with electricity generators on the electricity generation side, where we have signed offtake agreements with a number of renewable generators on the solar and wind front. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we warranty our batteries for life. For the first owners of our cars,
right.
We expect these batteries to not be thinking about a second life use case for 6 or 7 years at least. But even at that point in time, these battery packs are going to enjoy a 2022 year second life use case storage devices. So, mm-hmm. All this talk of landfills full of battery packs is just utter bunkum.
Yeah. So taking a step back from the automotive electric car sort of space, and the role and influence of China, which is innovating at a significant pace, what's your perspective there in where you think China would lead, and where cooperating with global companies or startups, where these links and benefits could come from? On that.
I think the popular narrative in the West is that Elon Musk was the wake-up call for the global automotive industry, and the guy catches a lot of headlines, and I think his place in the history books will be well assured. But really, it's what China's doing in terms of demanding the electrification of its market, for reasons of energy security, for reasons of air quality, and reasons of overall industrial strategy, which is really the beast that's driving changes at Ford, GM, PSA, elsewhere. As we were talking about earlier, this is a vast market, and it's still got scope to become even bigger. The idea that a global player, can ignore China, is crazy. But to play in the China market, particularly with the new dual credit policy that's being implemented, you've got to have an all-in strategy for electrification of your offering. As we've seen many times in the past in the automotive industry, global models aren't really a thing. You need to be thinking about what you're developing for, the China market specifically. So you saw Tesla announced that they were going to open a design shop in Shanghai with Giga 3, it doesn't surprise me remotely. You know, Chinese tastes are different. You know, if you look at, you know, the reasons why Chinese car buyers buy their cars, they're focused on, you know, very, very different, you know, key selling points. And top of that list is connectivity. I mean, the Chinese consumer simply wants, you know, his car. And remember, the use case for the passenger car in China is largely just moving relatively slowly in urban and suburban highways. In sub 50 kilometers an hour. It's all around, you know, comfort in the cabin, and it's around connectivity, having the latest, you know, having the all essential WeChat app integrated with your car, all of your popular streaming music and video and other podcasting apps, you know, up to the minute and totally integrated with the life that you live, you know, elsewhere on your mobile phone.
I think it's a very good point there that, you know, the different markets, the different environments, the different sort of customer requirements have to be sort of addressed, but there'll be strengths in countries in terms of their manufacturing capability, their scale, the way they engage with customers and stuff like that, which are going to be different. So you touched on very briefly earlier, just in terms of the coronavirus, COVID-19, you know, China has been through this now, we're recording this in early March. China's had 2 months of lockdown and changes. What has been the impact on WM Motor and your factory for the customers, and how do you sort of see it sort of coming out of it just as we're going into it and that now? So just briefly, because I think this will be old new story in 6 months' time, hopefully.
So Andrew, you tailed off slightly at the end of that question, but I think I got the gist of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of the overall industry, you know, obviously, you know, the coronavirus sort of impact kicked in at the same time as Chinese New Year. So, you know, effectively, you know, everything was shut down in anticipation of Chinese New Year, as a result of the virus outbreak, you know, everything remained shut for the best part of, you know, six weeks. But we are seeing, you know, from our company's perspective, we reopened our Wenzhou manufacturing facility in Zhejiang on the 21st of February, where we're now up to a level where, you know, just around three quarters of our franchise showrooms have now reopened, but really that number, we've only hit that number in the course of the last week. And so, you know, we are gradually, you know, coming out of the other end of it in China. Now, obviously, we're still at risk of two things, you know, a secondary breakout that causes everything to get shut back down again, but also, you know, let's not underestimate the importance of Hubei province to the overall automotive industry supply chain. A lot of those factories have not yet reopened and, you know, may not yet be open for several weeks. And I'm afraid a car can't leave the end of the final assembly line until it's got 100% of all of its parts. Sourcing those parts from other sources is not always straightforward. Having said that, Alfred and his team have been, in the Chinese auto business for as long as China's had an auto business, and so, you know, we feel very comfortable as to where our supply chain is now, and certainly sufficiently comfortable to restart production back on the 21st.
Yeah. No, great. Well, good to hear things are coming on. But our thoughts are really with the people in Hubei and China who've been battling this virus and that for some time on a personal health issue, but also just in terms of how it's disrupted people's lives and all that. It's our thoughts are with them.
No, it's been incredibly disruptive, and you know, the citizens of Wuhan, their lives are certainly not yet back to normal.
Yeah.
you know, it's very much the epicenter there.
Good. Right. On a lighter note, what do you do when you're not working to relax, Rupert? What makes you unwind?
Well, you know, funnily enough, I mean, I think one of the reasons that Freeman, you know, was interested in employing me is that I'm not remotely a rev head. I've never been that interested in cars. My fascination was more with, you know, the disruptive nature of the industry that the EV market represented coming in. So I certainly don't spend my weekends driving rally cars. But I, as you mentioned, I live in Hong Kong. I think everyone's sort of mental image of Hong Kong is, you know, concrete jungle wrapped around a harbour. It's actually one of the sort of greenest places on the planet. So lots of trail running and hiking around here at the weekends. You know, time on boats on the water. I'm also a fanatical skier and just got back from Europe for a half term ski with my daughters there. But yeah, lots to do in this neck of the woods.
Excellent. Rupert, it's been a fascinating podcast. Really appreciate giving us insights to one of these, you know, rapidly growing and fantastic cars, WM Motor. And you know, we'll include in the podcast some of the images and links and that to the car, so that people can sort of see that and some of the stats and that what's happening and that within China. But really appreciate your insights and your time. Thank you.
No, thank you, Andrew. Happy to chat anytime.
Please do subscribe for future podcasts. And if you like this broadcast, please give it a 5-star rating on iTunes or the platform that you listened on. Thank you.